And welcome back to Tuesday Night Talmud, the most explosive night of Talmud on Tuesday nights, sourced out of Providence on the internet. You may know that since we were doing Talmud on Tuesday night, there's this woman who's an internet sensation for her Talmudic videos on TikTok. You may or may not have heard about her. Have you heard about her? It's a big article in the Forward. So there's a woman who has very humorous, if you know, imagine if you took this stuff like a regular person and not like a rabbi, meaning you didn't treat it with sanctity and you didn't treat it with like a lot of respect, but you kind of just, you know, were totally brutally honest about what you thought was going on, about the egos and the personality faults and everything going on and all of the disputes that occurred. And you made daily TikTok videos about the Daf Yomi. So there's a woman doing that. And it's often very off color. You know, it's not G-rated, but it's phenomenal. And she's got hundreds of thousands of people. I'll get you some links after. And anyway, maybe I'll throw it into the announcements just to mix things up the weekly. But they're really.
Are you trying to bring me into the 21st century with TikTok?
TikTok. I don't know of TikTok, but I'm told that her Talmud videos, in particular, when the rabbis get excommunicated in Moed Katan, you know, because she's kind of been excommunicated. And so she has a very.
You're talking about the. Daf Yomi trick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's great.
It's phenomenal.
I think she's insightful.
You know, so there's something really good about bringing this down to the earth. I was just saying this is the most explosive night of Talmud. That was kind of the tagline that I used to give. But clearly, my point in bringing her up, other than to let you know about her, is that her Talmud is far more explosive than what we do. And so I can no longer honestly claim.
I actually think she is insightful, and she has been on this excommunication business.
How do you access her?
Let me get her thing in the chat. Hold on.
Plus, I think she likes me.
That makes her good right away.
Yes, Miriam Anzevin. Marvin, her name is Miriam. Okay.
Yeah, can't be too bad.
Where does she live? It's just a curiosity.
Probably New York somewhere. Yeah, so she's definitely the most exciting thing going on in Talmud, and I encourage everyone. I've learned a lot, I will say. I encourage everyone to check it out. Okay.
Is there a way of sending you a link?
Yeah, they're on YouTube also.
Okay.
Some people feel that her vulgarity is inappropriate when you're learning Talmud, but I think it's possible to look through it.
You know, for better or worse, you know, different cultures and different people have more, you know, different relationships with, for better or worse.
I would imagine the more traditional Orthodox rabbis are not happy with her.
There have been some excommunications that have been publicized. But there's the YouTube link at Congregation Beth Shalom. We promote that which has been excommunicated. On that note, I will note that my tremendous rabbi, Rabbi Eliezer Melamed, the Rosh Hashiva of Har Bracha, whose farm Penine Halacha are masterpieces of Jewish law, has also been placed in excommunication by 70 rabbis. And I look forward to the day when we can stock his fantastic series in our Beit Midrash. And onward from excommunication, which is dealt with in the Masechet Moed Katan, maybe actually, I was going to do Ta'anit when we finish Megillah, but maybe this group would rather do the chapters dealing with excommunication and chayrim and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, that actually is exciting. Anyway, so back here, and I thought we would use a different, maybe a different website tonight. I don't know. Lately, I've been a fan of Al HaTorah. So, you know, normally I use Sfaria, but are people familiar with Al HaTorah?
No.
Al Hatorad.org has some real benefits. It's a fun site. Also, here we are, and we're on McGill. Now, there's a little bit less English. For example, you can get English on some things, on some pages, but what you do get are, you can get the Tzura Sadaf, that over here, and you can get kind of good, I don't know, I find it easy. There's a lot of good cross-linking and commentary. So we'll see. I figured maybe we'd give it a try on this. Or, where is it here? The Tzura Sadaf itself, hold on. You can see it in different ways. No. All right, well, I need to get better at using this. That's the lesson. But there is a way to actually see the DAF like online with this. Here it is. So what's kind of nice is that I can go right to the DAF itself also, the way it looks in a classic Gemara. From there. So I like that. Anyway, so what do people prefer to work with? The old Svaria, this way, the old-fashioned Gemara on the screen, or this way, do people have preferences?
Well, I'm going to use Svaria. So.
Yeah, you want to do Svaria? We'll do Svaria.
I'm not doing it. Just be different.
No, we have it. on our tablet.
Okay, great.
This is easier to read.
This is easier to read than Svaria. Right?
No, the regular DAF.
The regular DAF is easier? Oh, this is easier to read.
No, this is what you have up now.
The regular Gemara was impossible to read. It was way too small.
It was too small.
Yeah.
Got it.
At least for
us. You see on the big TV of the
Altacockers.
No, I have my computer connected to the TV. I can put on the TV and be big enough.
Right. Okay, good. So we're going to start at the Mishnah here. Masnissen. Okay. So, B'Pesach. Yes. Okay, B'Pesach. So here's the Mishnah. And we did this last time, so we're going to go through it. And these are the readings you read on the holidays. B'Pesach, Korin, B'Parshas, Mo'ados, Shel Toras, Kohanim. On Passover, what Torah readings do we read on the holidays? On Passover, we read the Parsha of the festivals in Torat Kohanim, the Torah of the priests. And what is Torat Kohanim? The Torah of the priests. I'll give you a hint. It's one of the five
translation books. In Safari, it says from Vayikra.
Vayikra, that's correct. So the rabbis always refer to the book of Leviticus as Torat Kohanim, the Torah of the priests, because Leviticus, Vayikra, is about the priests primarily and the sacrifices. So as a result, they always call it Torat Kohanim. So that's just one of the things you've learned from Talmud already tonight. Torat Kohanim is Leviticus. So on Pesach, you read from the holidays in Torat Kohanim. Now, the Torah, the holidays are mentioned three times, as we've mentioned. They're mentioned in Shemot. They're mentioned in Torat Kohanim. And they're also mentioned in Re'eh, in Dvarim. So they're mentioned three different times. And each of the three different times, they're mentioned in three different ways. And those three different times and mentions are the source for three different mentions of the holidays in the Musaf Amidah of the festivals. So, maybe we should veer for a moment. Do you want the tangent?
Sure.
tangent. I think I said it last time, but this teaching will change Musaf. Forget the Talmud. If you fall asleep for the rest of Shir, this teaching will change Musaf on Yom Tov forever. And you daven Musaf on Yom Tov a lot. You know, that happens a lot. So prepare to have your mind blown. I'm now on Sfaria. Is that what you're seeing? I couldn't stay away long. Liturgy. We'll go with the Ashkenazic Siddur. Everyone here is an Ashkenazic Jew. And on the festivals, the Musaf. So here we start. You can hear it, right? It's coming soon. Pesach is only 54 days away or something like that. You God have chosen us from all of the nations. You wanted us and elevated us above all the other nations, our language, etc. You gave us the mitzvahs and you brought us close to your service. And you gave us these holidays. That statement of the holidays corresponds both in theme and in language to the mention of the holidays in the book of Shemot. Because in book of Shemot is when God took us out of Egypt and brought us close to his service, right? That is a summary of what happens in the book of Shemot, Exodus. So this is corresponding to the Torah reading of the holidays that occurs in the book of Shemot. Okay. Then here, Avinu Malkeinu, this is kind of a new, and it maybe ends here. Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, may it be your will that, you know, we went into exile, return us in your mercy and rebuild your temple and in all its glory. Full stop, end of section one, act two. Avinu Malkeinu, sounds like the introduction to our prayer, right? And how do we know it's an introduction to the prayer? The Chazanim have a tradition to schlep it out. Avinu Malkeinu. It's not just a thing. It's like new section, right? That's why they do it. And you go on with this request. And then what do we have here? Return us to Jerusalem and let us fulfill the obligations of the sacrifices of the holiday. Notice how we're listing the holidays again. In the first context, it's let us celebrate the holiday in the context of Shemot. Sanctify us above the other nations and bring us close to your service, to your mountain, to whatever, through the holiday. And here it's the sacrifices of that holiday, which is corresponding to the mention of the holidays in
the Amidah.
In Vayikra, right? In Torah Kohanim, right? In Leviticus, where it talks about the sacrifices. So that's the second mention. And then they give you literally the text from Vayikra. Okay. Get this right. Blah. Okay, and then Zecher Lamaaseh Bereshit, it ends. Elokeinu v'Elokei Avosenu. New section, right? You see Avinu Malkeinu, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avosenu. Why are we introducing ourselves to God again? New section, third section. Melech Rachaman Rachim Aleinu. Have mercy on us, right? Look after us. Let us do Shuva Aleinu Bahamon Rachamecha. Return to us. So we're in a Teshuva theme now. We'll return to you, you return to us, right? And then it gets directly into it. The Sham Na'ale will be seen there on your mountain, in your holy temple, three times, as it says. And this is what it says in Parshas Re'eh. Three times will be seen there. It's the mitzvah of making Aliyah L'Regel, of going up for the pilgrimage festivals, is mentioned with these words in Dvarim. Again, the third time, B'chag Hamatzos, B'chag V'shavs, that's the third mention of the holidays. And then it concludes this section, right, with this language. And then it says the bracha. So in any event, if we wanted to do a closer read of it, you would see how the actual words in Shemot correspond to the first section of the Amidah, and the actual words in Vayikra correspond to the words in the second section of the Amidah, and how the actual words in Re'eh correspond to the words of this concluding paragraph. But what the Amidah is doing is taking each statement of halachas of the holidays in the Torah, which are slightly different and different in theme and different in language, and making it a tefillah, So they're turning the Torah statement of what you should do on the holiday into a tefillah, prayer, that we do that thing that the Torah commanded us. So the Amidah of Musaf, if you're trying to understand what it is, it's literally just a rehash of the Torah in the form, not of a question, it's not jeopardy, in the form of a prayer. You literally took the Torah and turned it into a prayer, and you took each of the three holiday sections, that's what you'd get, which is exactly what the sages did. So in any event, the first time I learned this, which was from an old Yahrzeit shiur that Rav Soloveitchik recorded that they've been posting in like Yiddish with bad translation on the internet. So I learned this from the Rav speaking at a Yahrzeit lecture of some sort or another in Yiddish, I think in the 50s or something. But I think it's absolutely true that that's what's going on. The Rav doesn't need my haskama, but anyway, maybe your life is not as blown as mine was, but I offer that. Maybe on the next Yontif we'll do like an actual textual analysis when you see it a little more.
I may be saying something dumb, but I thought that you're mentioning it three times in Musaf is one, the Kedusha of the holiday, two, the agricultural aspect of the holiday, and three, the carbonate of the holiday.
Well, that is true. The Torah's three mentions of the holiday correspond to those three things, right? The kind of historical allusion, right. I see what you're saying. You're saying it Lav Davka, the Torah's three mentions. It's just the three different thematic references just of the holiday.
The Torah,
the agricultural season.
That's the way I always thought about it, yeah.
Hmm. That works. I think that the Torah sections, I'm going to have to look at them, but I think they do correspond to that, right? To sacrifices, agriculture, and history. Hetzarach Iyun, further exploration. But yes, good. So we should look at your claim, Donnie.
It's not my claim.
Okay. So on Pesach, Kohen b'parshas Moedas shel Toras Kohanim b'Atzeres. Sorry. So on Pesach, you read the ones in Vayikra. On Atzeres. So what is Atzeret?
What do you call it? Shavuos.
Shavuos. And why is Shavuos called Atzeres? Isn't Atzeres, sounds like Shemini Atzeres. Why is that Shavuos?
Yom HaBikurim, I think.
It's the first fruit. It's ending. Yeah,
it collapses into Pesach as one.
Yeah, it ends the Pesach to Shavuos, Omer Pesach Shavuos cycle. Right? It's one kind of massive festival of sorts. Okay, good. So on that one, you read Shiva Shavuos. You read, the Mishnah says, Shiva Shavuos Tisporlach. You should count for yourself 7 weeks. The Rosh Hashanah, it says, what do you read? B'chodesh Hashvi'i B'achad B'chodesh. On the seventh month, on the first of the month. Is that what we read on Rosh Hashanah? We read the section that begins on the seventh month of the first of the month, you should bring this kind of sacrifice. That's what we read?
We read about the Akedah.
We read about the Akedah, and what do we read about the first day?
I forget.
We read about Sarah conceiving, and then the second day we read about the Akedah, about that conception almost getting killed. We do read this for the Maftir, but what's going on? Okay, so we'll just hold that. B'yom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur, we read Achrei Mos B'nei Aaron B'korvasam L'tnei Hashem V'yamusu, when the sons of Aaron died, when they came to service, because the tradition is that happened on Yom Kippur. So when else do you go in? B'yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag, on the first day of Chag. And what is Chag? Generic festival?
Sukkos.
Why is Sukkos the generic festival?
Because it's supposed to be a pure rejoicing.
Huh? It's a pure holiday. Sukkot is just pure holiday. And isn't it? Mm-hmm. I can't wait. Okay. So we've got some time. So on the Chag, that needs no introduction, You read Kohen B'Parshas Moedas Shel Toras Kohanim. You read the one in Vayikra, U'Vishar Klimos HaChag B'Korbanos HaChag. And the other days of Sukkot, you read about the sacrifices. B'Chanukah, on Chanukah, B'Nisi'im, you read about the the chiefs in Bamidbar and the sacrifices they brought at the inauguration of the Mishkan, and Bapurim on Purim coming up. What do we read? We read Vayavo Amalek, about Amalek. Veroshe Chodeshim on Rosh Chodesh. What do we read? Veroshe Chodeshim. We read the thing that says on Rosh Chodesh. Not everything is a tremendous Chiddush in Torah Shabbat Peh. You know, this is just the recounting of it. And B'ma'amados B'ma'asa Breshis. So what are the Ma'amadot? People remember what those are?
The rotation of the
Toranut, the rotation. Right, so, you know, how did you split up the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash? What in the temple, what did you do? So they had different cities, right, on a 24-week rotation cycle where Kohanim from different cities throughout Israel would come, and there'd be backup Kohanim and backup Kohanim in case things happened to them. And the people would be responsible for the sacrifices, and they would come and pray over the Kohanim. And so during the week where your city's Kohanim were in charge, there was a special reading of Breshit. And why was the special reading Breshit? We're going to see it later, but does anyone have an idea? The Gemara will tell us. It's always true. A question, by the way, on Sukkot, we mentioned what we do on day one and then what we do the rest of the days. But on Pesach, we only mentioned what we do on day one. We ignored the rest of the days. Just noting it. That's all. Okay. Next page. Let's see. Previous. Next. Okay. Betanios on the fast. Brachos uklalos. We've discussed this a little bit. They would read the blessings and the curses, which we do not do for reasons we discussed last semester. And then they tell you, Ein mafsikim bekalot ela achad kores kulan. Can you break up the tochacha? Kalot mean curses. And those are the tochachas. There are two tochachas, one in Bechukotai at the very end of the book of Vayikra, and one in Parshat. Who can name it? Name that Parsha.
It's somewhere in Devarim, I don't know where.
Somewhere in Devarim. Not Ki Tetze. But rather Ki Tavo. There we go. I heard it from Marvin. Ki Tavo.
That's because it was Jacob's Parsha.
Always a great Bar Mitzvah Parsha. Doom and curses. That was also Ayla Krieger's Bat Mitzvah Parsha last year, right? So Brachot Uklalot, and we have a history of Bashalom of getting Bar and Bat Mitzvah kids on that Parsha. So my brother also. En mafsikim b'kalot ele echad koreas kulan. You don't break up the curses, but rather one person reads them all. Now we're just finishing the Mishnah. Basheni uvachamishi b'shabes b'mincha koin kisidran. On Monday and Thursday and on Shabbos afternoon, you read in order, meaning that this is the source of that thing we do. We do this. The Ein Olim Lahem Min HaCheshbon. But they don't count. They don't count in the count. What does it mean they don't count in the count? They don't count in the count. What does it mean they don't count?
I would assume for the rotation of the reading, this is not considered having been read.
Right. It's not considered having been read. So what that means is, right, this Shabbos, in the afternoon, assuming we get a minyan for Mincha, we're going to read three aliyot from next week's reading, right? That's what we do. We read three of the next week, mm-hmm. Isn't it? Now, on Monday, we read the same three. And on Thursday, we read the same three. And then that next Shabbos, when we show up to shul, we don't only have four aliyot left to divide. That would make it easier to lane if we could split it up among 3 days, 4 days. We do a quarter on Saturday, a quarter on Monday, a quarter on Thursday, a quarter on Shabbos. That would be nice. But rather, it didn't count in the count. You got to do the whole parsha on Shabbos morning. That's the rule. We'll discuss that a little bit if we want. Let's discuss that a little bit. Yeah, leave it. I don't know that there's. Let's see if I could.
Is the reason? I haven't learned anything about this, but I'm just guessing. Is there the reason for doing it at least on Monday and Thursday? Because Monday and Thursday were the market days, and so everybody's coming to the market, and is the idea that you should read from the Torah, should do some learning, not just doing weekday activities and work stuff, but you should do some learning each day. So you come to market, so you say one portion from the Torah. So you're doing something that has kedusha to it.
Okay, good. Why? Okay, so Donnie says it's the market theory of reading. Is their market day, so that doesn't apply to Shabbos afternoon.
No, it doesn't apply to Shabbos afternoon. Right?
But anyone, why do we do that?
That's what I said. I'm saying, didn't I just say that? So the at least something, some kedusha to the day rather than pure making money and business and making money and all that kind of stuff. And okay.
So here's what we get in the Yerushalmi. That's good. The Talmud Yerushalmi, which we have here quoted in Rabbi Yishmael ben Chachmon. Don't know, but this is part of the benefit of these. So it's the Yerushalmi tells us, and this is also mentioned in the Rif. Moshe tikin lahem liyisrael shiu korim b'torah b'sheni v'chamishi. Do people see where I am? Here?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Moshe decreed to Israel that they should read the Torah on Monday and Thursday. So Moshe, so it's a decree of Moshe. Now, it's not a Torah law. Moshe made a rule that they should do it. V'amrina b'perk merubah, right? And bava kama, mikal eser tekana shetikan eser shikorim b'tov v'mincha b'shabas v'shini v'chamishi. That, so the Yerushalmi says it's a tekana of Moshe. The Bavli says that it's a tekana of Ezra. It makes a little more sense. that they should read on Shabbos and Shini and Chamishi. So there's this tradition. I'm going to summarize all that. That when they were in the Midbar, it says that they went 3 days without water. And of course, Chazal say, there is no water but Torah. Torah is our water. And so the quest of the Israelites for water, that, you know, that quest that leads to so much quarreling and dispute and ultimately to Moshe's, sentence is the source for this idea that you can't go 3 days without Torah, without a public reading of Torah. And so you've kind of got to space it out. And so this is like a debate here they're saying. In other words, what do you mean Ezra decreed it? It was already decreed in the Torah, as we have alluded to, from this idea that you can't go 3 days without water. 3 days without water, you can't go 3 days without Torah. People know you can't go 3 days without water. That's like a common fact, right?
Yeah.
You can't go 3 days without water. So now when you hear that, you can't go 3 days without hearing the reading of the Torah. So what's the answer to this contradiction? Did Moshe decree it, or is it decreed in the desert, or was it decreed by Ezra? So no, maybe at the beginning you had to read the Torah, but it could be one guy reading three verses. But now we know it's got to be three guys with nine verses or 10 verses. Inami tzlasa gavra tzlasa psuke keneged kohanim levim v'yisraelim asa ezra tikin tzlasa gavra asara psuke keneged asara batzmanim. So maybe the original decree was three people, nine verses. Came Ezra and said three people, 10 verses. What's the minimum amount of verses in the reading? So Moshe said it was nine, well, like three per person, but what the total has to be 10. It's an interesting rule. Each aliyah has to have three, but the total has to have a minimum of 10 verses. So maybe Moshe thought a minimum of nine was okay, but Ezra came and said, no, it's got to be 10 in honor of conjunction with corresponding to, sorry, the 10 batlanim. Who are the 10 batlanim? What are those? Anyone remember? In the Gemara and Megillah in the very beginning, the 10 batlanim, how do you know if your city is a city or if your city is a village?
Oh.
A wall. Peter says, does it have a wall? What's the difference between a city and a village? What is provenance? So the Gemara says, and this has ramifications for whether you read Megillah or can read Megillah early or have to read it on the 14th. In any event, the Gemara says your city is a city if you've got 10 batlanim. What's a batlan? A batlan who sits, someone who sits around and does nothing. Batlan. So in this version of it, they're like kolomniks. They sit around and just learn all day, but they don't have a trade. So if you have like a kolel in your city, which means you have a minion, if you have a regular minion, that is to say, and the only way you have a regular minion, the Gemara assumes, is if you've got 10 guys on the roster to just be there. If you don't have 10 dudes who are just paid to be there, you're not going to have a minion. That's the presumption. And that is what makes a city a city and a village, a village. A village has an unreliable minion. A city has 10 kolo guys, so you know you have a minion. So Ezra, they're saying Ezra decreed that you have to have 10 verses, one verse for each regular in the minion, so to speak. Now we double time it. We ask our working people and even our retirees to be regulars in the minion. So it's a totally different dynamic. You know, the batlanim were paid just to be there. All right. We may have to go back to that model one day. Okay, so that all of that was a kind of aside about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But the basic idea is you don't want to go too many days without Torah, and it maybe was a decree of Moshe that got expanded in some way during the time of Ezra. Final thing, Shanem, Avedeber Moshe Moadeh, Hashem, and this proof text is the proof text for all of it, right? This is the proof text for the whole thing. That Moshe, Vaydaber Moshe, Moadei Hashem, Moshe spoke the holiday, spoke about or taught the festivals of the Lord to the Bnei Israel, to the Israelites. What does that mean? Mitzvotan shiukorin kol echad b'echad bizmano. It says Moshe taught the holidays to the Israelites. It's not describing what Moshe did. It's telling us that we are required to speak about the holiday on the holiday by using the words of the Torah. In other words, that's the verse in the holiday daytime Kiddush. So people know it, right? I think that's where people know it from. And it's also from the Torah Kohanim, the Vayikra reading of it. But that is also, Chazal interpreted that to me, just like Moshe spoke about Pesach on Pesach. You should read the Torah of Moshe about Pesach on Pesach. Okay. One thing, there's a Tosafot that I want to bring from the prior daf, the last Tosafot. It says the following. I guess I could I'll show it to you. I don't know. This Tosafot, Dushar Yemot HaChag Korim B'Korbanot HaChag. Do you see that there? And watch. I know some people said it was too, look at that. I made it bigger.
Oh, wow.
But corresponding to which part in Gemara?
The rest of the days of the holiday of Sukkot, you just read the sacrifices. That part of the Mishnah. Do people see this Tosafot here? I blew it up nice and big for you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. I realized I can do that. This computer has a function, you know. I'm learning. So, ask the question. V'hash anuma amidin sefer Torah shnia b'moedot. That thing that we do, where we read two Torahs on the holiday, sefer Torah shnia b'moedot. V'korin b'korbanot hayom. And in addition to whatever reading we read about that holiday, we read also about the sacrifices of that holiday. You know, we do that where we read the thing and then we do it, the Sefer Rishon, the Sefer Sheni. We take out, then we read about the sacrifice on that day every time. The Mafti. Yeah. Lo matzinu smach b'talmud. The Talmud never mentions anything about that. Say the Tosafot. Like, where did we get that from? It's not in the Talmud. So that's pretty interesting. That thing is not in the Talmud. Ach, the Seder Rav Amram Yeshno. You know where it does appear? In the Seder of Rav Amram Gaon. Now, Rav Amram Gaon was one of the first two Sederim we are very familiar with. Was one of the Gaonim. Amram Gaon lived.
Go back to the Mishnah.
Gosh, anyone for dates on Amram Gaon?
Ninth century.
That's what I would have think. Amram Gaon. Yep, 9th century in Sura. Here from Wikipedia, his chief work was liturgical. That's the Sidur. He was the first to arrange a complete liturgy for the synagogue. So what we can know about Rav Amram Gaon, and I think this is right, I thought it's the first we know of, but he's got the first Sidur that's really a full Sidur that we recognize as a Sidur. That's a big deal. His Sidur, which is the Seder Rav Amram, is still available. And most of our tefillot are based on his Sidur, as opposed to others which existed at that time. You'll know his work most because he wrote a lot of Pizmonim. So you know the Pizmon that we do when we open the Ark?
Yeah.
During the Slichot, we open the Ark and we do it in a little back and forth chant. Those are all Rav Amram Gaon. Almost all of those are Amram Gaon. And so he did a lot of work of liturgy. In any event, so here the Tosafot are saying, you don't find any mention of the second reading in the Talmud, but you do find it in the Seder Rav Amram, which is the name of the Sidur of Amram Gaon, the head, he died in 875. So it's interesting, you see that the Gaonim, and this is advanced Talmud, had a slightly different tradition than the Talmud. Right? In other words, there was the Talmud, but there was an oral tradition that continued, and it wasn't all necessarily recorded. Right? The Gaonim were the people that wrote the Talmud. But there was a point at which they stopped writing it, and traditions either continued to develop or they had slightly different traditions. We're going to see, by the way, that what we do in the readings is mainly following Amram Gaon, and those readings are different in many circumstances than what we just read in the Mishnah, and we're going to get into that. So
is Rabbi Amram the first actual Siddur?
I think people think it's the first whole Siddur, like the first person to decide to put it in a book and call it the Siddur. Yeah, he wrote the Siddur.
We had a Siddur, the what do you call it? See the chazan did everything from heart most of the time, by heart.
That's right. That's right.
So at some point, I mean, I think it's Rav Aaron the first time when they wrote it down for the chazan or whoever.
I don't know if he, I think his was more. He added a lot of piyutim. I think his was more kind of organizing and collecting. This is the way it should be. You know, I don't know how much they used it in shul versus how much it was like a reference book in the library, you know, that you'd go and check. I don't know. But I think, you know, he's the first Siddur, the oldest Siddur that people that people really quote as a book. You know, they have the whole manuscript. We have the whole book of his Siddur. And he's the first Siddur that we have, you know, before Art School, before Burn Down, before Desola Pool, there was Rav Amram Gaon. We had a copy in the old shul of it in the bookshelves downstairs, a very thick copy. It was in tatters, in total tatters. The pages were disintegrating. I went to open it one time and the page crumbled in my hand. But we had an old copy of that was published in Europe in the late 1800s. But it's in pretty rough shape. and, you know, now you can buy copies at like Eichler's or other places. I mean, the only people that really buy copies are like academics or like real Balei Tefillah or Chazanim that are interested. Okay. Uktzat yesh samach ledavar. So the second reading. You can find a samach ledavar, a kind of hint to this. Mehada amar lekaman. Later we're going to say, Amar Avraham levnei kadosh baruch hu. And this is, they're imagining a dialogue between Abraham and God at the Brit Bein HaBetarim. What's the Brit Bein HaBetarim? Abraham is told that his people are going to go into exile and be redeemed. They're going to be slaves in Egypt and get taken out and go through the exiles. And he says, B'mayida, how will I know that the people will be redeemed, that my people that you're making for me are not going to just be crushed and killed? And God says, you know, walk through these animals that you're going to split, right? And there's this kind of ceremony where three different animals are split and Abraham walks through the sacrifices. So the Gemara will later imagine, Amar Avram b'nei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Avram said to God, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, etc. We'll get into what he says. Amar l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, I already told you to read the korbanos. Whenever you read the korbanos, I will forgive you. That's not here, but that's in the Gemara over there. So there's a tradition that if you read the korbanos, God will forgive you. Now, question, what does it mean to read the korbanos? Some people understand that to mean read the korbanos in the davening, which is how do we get this expansive korbanos at the beginning of davening a little bit, right? And some people say it means no, read the korbanos of the festival in the Torah. So, you know, it comes from a kind of homiletical idea, not so much a Mishnah. Okay. Where do we go? Where am I? Here I am. Okay, Gemara. So we'll start the Gemara. We have 10 minutes left, but we've done the Mishnah. Any questions on the Mishnah so far or anything like that? Great. Tanu Rabbanan. Pesach Kohen Beparshas Maados Umavtirin Bepesach Gilgal. So now we're getting a little bit more. A Baraisa, Tanu Rabbanan. A Baraisa is a teaching that's not in the Mishnah, but it's giving us a little, it's authoritative still, and it's giving us more information. So on Pesach, you read about the Moados in Torah's Kohanim, like the Mishnah said. But what's the Maftir? What's the Haftorah? So the Haftorah is Pesach.
You're in the Mishnah.
Of Gilgal. So what's the Pesach of Gilgal? When Yeshua is with the people and they are about to enter the land, they're not circumcised, you may remember, and the males, and they can't offer the Passover sacrifice because you have to be a circumcised male in order to offer the Passover sacrifice. So there's a mass circumcision ceremony that occurs right at Gilgal, and an angel appears and all these things happen. Yeah. and they enter the land. That's where they cross over into the land of Israel. It's a dramatic moment. And thematically, of course, the first Passover corresponds with entry into Israel. It furthers the whole redemption narrative. So that is the Haftorah, information we did not get from the Mishnah. Now, what's the problem? This Passover in the Mishnah was written in Israel. How many days of Passover did they celebrate? How many days of Yontiv at the beginning in Israel?
One.
But we have two. So what about us? So we're in the Babylonian Talmud here. So they need to know Beha, Idna, and today. But today is not today for us. Today is today for them. Dika Treyome, where you got 2 days. Yom HaKama B'Pesach Gagal, L'machar B'Pesach Yoshiyahu. The first day is Pesach Gilgal. I can make this bigger too, can I? Is that nicer for people? A little bigger?
Well, I'm following on the story anyways.
All right, I made it a little bigger anyway. So what the first day is Gilgal. And the Machar, the second day, is the Passover of Josiah. What happened during the Passover of Josiah? Anyone?
He rededicated stuff because there was a ton of idol worship being beforehand.
A ton of idol worship, and they discovered a Torah. Remember, they rediscovered the Torah, and they were like, this book, what's this book we found? It's the Torah, and everyone assumes that it's Devarim. And they were like, oh gosh, we're not doing this. Are these the rules? That's what happens there. It's not a great scene. And there's a rededication that happens on Passover. So in both cases of the Haftorah, they choose examples in Tanakh where Pesach is concurrent with a national rededication of some sort. In one case, a national rededication to Mila. They didn't circumcise in the desert because it was dangerous while they were wandering and didn't want to risk infection. At least that's the kind of story that's told. And in the second version, a rededication about following the Torah and Teshuvah. So those are the two Haftorahs. Now, what's the issue? We got two Haftorahs, and we got one Torah reading. So I'm going to read a note from the Art Scroll. The Art Scroll Hebrew, by the way, you know, there are different Talmuds. The Stein Salts is really great for certain things. The Art Scroll Hebrew has dramatically better footnotes than any other edition of the Talmud. And it has very different footnotes than its English footnotes. They're much more scholarly. They make certain presumptions, I'm going to gather, about who can read Hebrew. And so if you want the best footnotes, the Art Scroll Hebrew editions have the best footnotes. For our Beit Midrash, we'll need a copy of every Shas. So I wanted to read this footnote, if that's okay. Bizman Hachmea Talmud, during the time of the sages of the Talmud, lo hayu kriyot haftarot kvotus durot. The haftorahs weren't fixed yet. Haftarot shel ha-moedim uzmanim yochadim achirim omnam miniyot bebaraita lefaneinu. Now, the Baraita we're learning, and we're going to learn a long Baraita that's going to teach us all of the Haftorahs, are listed in the Baraita in front of us. Ulam kaimim ayu harbe minagim shunim. But there were so many different customs about the Haftorah. Umigvanim amakom hatzchalat Haftorah v'siyuma. And a lot of debates and different opinions about where, even when you agree on what the Haftorah is, where do you start and where do you end? Like, we all agree we're going to read this story. It just mentions stories. But then, of course, you ask the question, what's the beginning and what's the end? Because the prophet goes on forever. And I think you know, that's how we get still many customs, right? Chabad Hasidim do this, Ashkenazim do this, Poles do that, Sephardic Jews do this, Moroccans do that, all of these different things, because there are many different customs. There's kind of continuity of really old customs, according to the footnote. Leitim krovot hanoagim b'kriyat parshiot achirot in a muskar b'baraita. And sometimes we would read things that aren't mentioned at all in this baraita. Perut morchav leminagim ilu kvish muskar b'sifre gonim. There's a lot of detail about these customs mentioned in the books of the Gonim, and in particular in the Seder of Rav Amram Gaon. Again, Rav Amram Siddur coming out. Harishonim Poskim Mofia Encyclopedia Talmudit Erechav Torah Sifhei. If you want an exhaustive list of every custom, look in the Encyclopedia Talmudit, chapter 5, under Haftorah. If you go to Haftorah, chapter 5, it lists all the customs. The Ilu, Peret HaMinagim HaNizkarim B'Chamushim, Sidri Machzurim, B'Sifri Minagilot B'Mekort Nosvi Machirim, Mofia Sham, B'Nispach Lerech Zebesof HaKrach. If you want to know all the customs that are actually done in synagogues today, go to the end of that chapter. Okay, and then they just note here that they're going to make a footnote when Ashkenaz or Sfard differs from what's in the Mishnah or the Talmud. Right, but they're saying there are many customs, you follow, about the Haftorah, because it's a little bit, it's not an omission, it's a little bit amorphous. Okay. Now, Ushar Yemot HaPesach, Melakit V'Korim In Yenosho Pesach, Mahi Amarav Papa, Ma'apu Siman. So on the rest of Pesach, what do you do? So Rav Papa says, you do according to Ma'apu. So what is Ma'apu, you might ask? And we're going to get into the reading on the second day of Yom Tov in a little bit. But Ma'apu stands for Siman for the following. And we'll end with this. Sorry. Looking for Rashi.
I can tell you what Safari says. You interested?
Yeah, it's going to be the same.
Okay, good.
Here, so good. Ma'apu. Yeah, Ma'apu is an acronym. Here you see it, Ma'apu. So it stands for Mishchu Ukhu Lechemzon. Mishchu Ukhu Lechemzon. Right. So that is from Shemot. Parshas Bo, right? Take for yourself, a sheep. And then the second, Aleph, Im Kesef Taveh Etami, if you lend my people, if you lend money to my people, you should not lend to them, you know, with interest. And that is from Shemot Kaf Bez, from Parshat Mishpatim. Yeah, and why do you read that one? Because it mentions Chag Hamatzot there. Then Pei is for, according to Rashi, Psol Lecha, right? Shnei Luchot Avanim Karishonim, from after the golden calf. And Vav is, as Rashi says, Vadeber Shebehalotcha. In Parshas Balotcha, it says Vadeber
Hashem
El Moshe, and that is about Pesach Sheni. Now, the Yom Tov Sheni, here Rashi fills it in for us because the Gemara hasn't yet. On the second day of Yom Tov, Korim Kayom Rishon, Shor O Chesed. You read just like on the first day, the reading, Shor O Chesed, the reading from Vayikra. It's the same reading, day one and two. Okay. We're going to pause there. I know this is a little, sometimes Gemara has interesting debates. And this is just kind of more the evolution of what we read. So it lacks some of the juiciness of Miriam Anzevin's wise, cunning TikTok videos. But we'll get into certain issues pretty soon, but we're going to go through everything we read. I do think it's useful to learn because then on the holiday, when you learn it, when you lane it, I do think there's a lot more attachment to like where the customs came from. So you get a sense there's an order and a rhyme and a reason to all of this. So we're going to kind of go through that. And I would say in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll be able to finish the Gemara and Megillah. And then let me know if you want to do Ta'anit after, which what I was planning, or if you want to do instead the excommunication passages of the Gemara in Moed Katan. Excommunication, or if I was thinking Ta'anit because it deals with fasting, plague, famine, death, war.
Ooh,
and,
yeah. Just,
and that felt like right for now. Anyway, we're going to finish this. I'll admit it's a little bit of a drag through to the end here, but I think it's it will, it, you know, sometimes in Talmud, you got to kind of break your teeth on this. But so just to review, tonight we kind of laid out the source both for the second reading as sacrifices that are forgiven, though not actually listed in the Mishnah. We discussed the difference between what's mentioned in the Mishnah and the Seder of Amram. We discussed the actual readings on each of the holidays and the source for reading on Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, and the debate between Ezra and Moshe, that kind of thing, or how it, you know, who started it. So a bunch of things hopefully are valuable. Thank you again
for
the return to Tuesday Night Talmud. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel. And I anticipate, unlike many other seasons, I have no conflicts on Tuesday that I can think of through, you know, as far as my calendar goes to the end of, you know, it's not going to be, we're going to be on every week.
Right.
So that we'll, that's a kind of learning too, you know, rather than we're going to keep learning. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, if I close this.